on the theme of foundational principles of chanting. So far we discussed Shikshastakam verse number 1, where 7 outcomes or consequences or what comes from chanting of Krishna's holy name to inspire us to chant. So we're going to see appearing on the board the first of 9 items. Make sure there's room. Right, small enough that 9 can fit on the board. First one is chant. And go ahead and write the next one. That one's here. This second verse is inspiring us to hear. So we can recite the verse together. Nam nam akari bahuda nija sarva shaktis tatra ita niyamatak smaranena kalaha etadashi tapakripa bhagavan mamabhi durdaivam idrishi mahajanina nuragaha. And as I have the microphone, the translation. O my Lord, your holy name alone can render all benediction to living beings. And thus you have hundreds and millions of names like Krishna and Govinda. In these transcendental names you have invested all your transcendental energies. There are not even hard and fast rules for chanting these names. O my Lord, out of kindness you enable us to easily approach you by your holy names. But I am so unfortunate. I have no attraction for them. Following from the first verse where what happens when you chant, these verses are further describing the mercy of Krishna and the how Krishna is making himself accessible to us, so easily approachable. But then our misfortune, we have no attraction. Even understanding all these things, we have no attraction. So, as we did with the first verse, we'll go through the meanings, because when we're chanting mantra or chanting prayers, it's important to meditate upon the meaning. I'll share this little experience with you. We had a situation in New York where our leader was, he had a problem. He had a big problem. And one of the things that happens when you have a big problem is you disconnect yourself from shelter. So that you don't have to feel so bad about the big problem. Makes the problem worse. So this leader had, he was, in his mind, he was minimizing Srila Prabhupada. One of the things was, before his time, there was this very Vyasasan that's right here, was in New York. And it was on a raised platform, but before Prabhupada came, it got lower and lower, is practically just like that little bottom part on the ground. Prabhupada knew what that meant. He didn't remark specifically about that, but when he greeted the deities after his morning walk and Govindam Adi Purusham and went to his Vyasa-san for Guru Puja, and after Guru Puja, during Guru Puja, the devotees were leading Guru Puja, singing joyfully Guru Puja. He stopped the kirtan and asked, "What is the meaning?" He offered, I don't remember what it was, because I froze. He was angry, transcendentally angry. "What is the meaning of this phrase?" And no one answered. So his volume went up. "What is the meaning?" Nobody answered. His volume went up. "You sing this song every morning and you don't know the meaning?" One devotee raised his hand, standing up, he raised his hand and very meekly, bravely offered the meaning. Prabhupada said, "Yes." Guru Mukha Padma Vakya Chitete Kuriya Aikya Arna Kariha Mane Ash. So he gave the correct meaning. And then he said, then continue. So the message was, we don't recite prayers without knowing the meaning. Unless you want to get, you know, roasted. Then after kirtan, everyone sat down. And this devotee took his Bhagavatam and put his Bhagavatam on a cushion next to him, thinking he's respecting the Bhagavatam. Prabhupada stopped. And intense heat was coming from Prabhupada towards this leader that was having a problem. And he just pointed. He didn't say anything. Everyone's looking like, you know, what? And then he said, "You do not sit on the same platform as the Srimad Bhagavatam. The Bhagavatam is Krishna." He was thinking, I didn't put it on the ground. You know, you don't put it on the ground. But he put it on a cushion next to the cushion that he was seated on. So he's on the same platform as the Bhagavatam. So he picked up the Bhagavatam and put it on his lap. I can't even remember what the lecture was that day. I was in recovery mode for quite a while. So, my dear devotees, learn the meanings of these. We're to recite them regularly and meditate on the meaning as we recite them. So, Nam Nam Akari Bahudha Nijasarva Shaktis. Nam Nama, we know, is name. Nam Nam is of the name. Nam Nam Akari means manifested. You have manifested Bahudha, many of such names. So Prabhupada has translated it. By your mercy, you have manifested thousands and millions of such names. Names such as Krishna, Govinda, etc. And Nija Sarva Shaktis, you have invested Sarva Shaktis. Nija Sarva Shaktis, you have invested all of your transcendental potencies in your holy name. So this is two glories so far. The names are unlimited. Bahudha. Millions and millions. And in each of these names, all of your transcendental potencies have been invested. So who can measure what that is? I mean, how thick are we that we're chanting Krishna's name and we don't melt? How close do you have to get to the sun before you feel the heat of the sun? And we feel the heat of the sun at such a distance. One of Prabhupada's descriptions is that the universe is so carefully structured that if the sun is just the right distance, if it was a little further away, too cold, we couldn't live. If it was closer, a little bit closer, too hot, we'd burn up. Just right. And they say there is no God. Just an accident. Chance event in all of nature. Anyway. So there's, and the energy of the sun is a material energy. We know from Sri Brahma Samhita that the energy of the sun is but a reflection of the energy of the Brahma Jyoti, which is but the rays of the Supreme Lord, who is the source of all those rays. So what to speak of him? And all of his transcendental potencies are invested in each and every one of his holy name. How merciful he is. And how hearted are we that our hearts don't melt. Nam nam akari bahuda nija sarva shaktis trarpita niyamata smarane nikala. There's yama and niyama in the Ashtanga yoga system. Even before you do asanas is the yama and niyama. Basically the injunctions and the prohibitions. You know, the character of a quality person, a spiritually qualified person. What to speak of the Ashtanga yoga system, even in martial arts, they teach, before they teach you, you know, how to chop somebody or kick somebody or hit somebody or something. It's, you know, ethics and morality, the do's and the don'ts. They don't teach us that stuff in school. It's just, you know, here's the stuff. Now, you know, you can just find somebody to employ you to use that stuff. Go right ahead. Because we're not teaching you moralities. We're not supposed to do that in school. That's like religious, so we can't do that. So we just teach you, here's a bunch of toys. Good luck. But in Vedic rituals, there's rules and regulations. And the do's and the don'ts, the injunctions and the prohibitions. But with the chanting of the holy name, there's no such niyama. To remember the holy name or chant the holy name, the time, place, and circumstance, nakalaha, you can chant at any time and in any place. You can chant before the deity and you can chant in the bathroom. You can chant when you're awake and you can chant when you're asleep. You can chant standing up, you can chant lying down. You can chant when you're clean, you can chant when you're unclean. Better to be clean. Better to be standing up. But in any circle, there's no injunction against chanting at any time. In fact, we covered it this morning. Chant at any time, in any circumstance. Even if you're Kamsa. Go ahead, chant Krishna's name. Shishupal, chant Krishna's name. Chant Krishna's name. Because it's all auspicious. Nija Sarva Shaktis Tatrapita. Arpita means bestowed. You've bestowed all your transcendental potencies in these holy names, and there's no hard and fast rules for chanting. At any time, kalaha, in any circumstance. Krishna, you're so merciful. Etadrishi tava kripa bhagavan mamapi. You're so etadrishi, so much merciful. You made yourself in the, not only you've made your mercy available, you've made yourself available. It's like, you know, the sun's rays in the sun, or the energy of the person in the person. They didn't just send you a text message, they came to your door. In person. Saying, how are you doing? I'm inviting you to come with me to the spiritual world. Would you like to go? I don't know if I want to go. Dur Daivam Idrishimaha. Even I understand all these things, all the seven things and the five things here. I have no attraction. Dur Daivam Idrisham Ahajani Nanuraga. There's Raga and there's Anuraga and there's Nanuraga. Raga means attraction. Raga is something in music. It's a term used in music, but a raga in music, it brings out a particular mood, or it complements a particular mood. Raga. So there are different notes at different times of the day and different combinations. They are appropriate for a particular time of day because it matches the mood of the day. And by hearing them, it complements the mood of the day and it brings out a certain mood. And those that know that science of raga, besides singing ragas that are appropriate for a particular time of the day, certain notes can evoke sadness, or, you know, like the end of the day, or the receiving of the beginning of the day, or midday. So we have like our Mangal Arati melody, but it's, what's particular about it is the notes, and it's a certain raga. And there's some other melodies that are also of the same raga. So, Anurag, that's a kind of a common name in India, right? Anurag. So, Anu means to follow. Anuraga. Like we have Rupa Goswami saying Anushilana, where there's a behavior following the perfected souls. And the perfected souls are pleasing to Krishna. So, Anushilanas, we're cultivating those activities of the perfected souls that are pleasing to Krishna. So, Anuraga, following that attraction for Krishna. And this is Nanuraga. I don't have any. I have no attraction. So there's the gap. Here's what I know. And here's where I am. And recognizing what I know and where I am, it's dur daivam. Unfortunate. So, the essence of all of our misfortune is this one. That we don't have attraction, or we're disconnected. Going back to yesterday's topic, or the title of the topic, connectedness, or connected chanting. So ours is disconnected. We're separated or divorced from Krishna, and we're calling his name. It's not with the sense of connectedness. Not like we necessarily file the divorce with Krishna, but to come to the material world, in effect, internally, that's what we've done. We're disconnected. So even when chanting, we're the phrase in the 10 offenses against the chanting of the holy name is pramada, means inattention. And the root of it is madness. It's crazy. I mean, to know all these things and still we're not paying attention? Like the question at the very beginning, when chanting, is our awareness going to the fact that Krishna is present? He's making his association available to us. Is that where our attention is going? Even if we know it, Krishna is none different than his holy name, and we're still got a sign on our door that says out to lunch. And that at the same time, we're there. You just have the sign up that says out to lunch. Like, don't knock on my door. Don't call me, I'll call you. It's rude. It's foolish. It's crazy. It's the root of all. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur teaches, Haridas Thakur teaches, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur teaches, our acharyas in the matter of chanting the holy name teach. The root of all the offenses against the chanting of the holy name is this one. This madness or inattentiveness when chanting. And all of the, material life has its dissatisfactions. There's, materially speaking, the wanted part, and materially speaking, the unwanted part. From a spiritual perspective, it's all unwanted. But from a material perspective, there's the unwanted part. You know, when we do things that are not nice, we yell at somebody, we get angry with somebody, we speak badly about somebody, behind their back or to their face, and we do things that are, they're not nice. And other than surprise, those things happen to us. And it's not nice. Very clearly remember as a teenager going through this thing of saying, why are people like this? Everybody wants to be treated nicely and, with some little decorum and little respect. But people are so busy doing just the opposite all the time, left and right and sideways. Why? And there's no good answer. There's no good answer. Oh, frustration. Like, toss in the towel, forget this program. I'm checking out. I don't know where I'm going, but I'm checking out of this program. And where do you go? If you don't have Krishna consciousness, you go, become an existentialist. Become frustrated. Go crazy. Or become angry. Ah, that's a good one. Just become angry. Just like get mad at people for stuff. And start, what's wrong with you people? And we're doing the same thing. We're participating in the same program. We just bought into the, read the script and did it. That's not an answer either. All of unwanted behaviors spring from this dissatisfaction of being disconnected from Krishna. Or say it the other way around. Fix this one thing. You fixed all the other things. Try to fix the other things without fixing this one thing. You're not going to fix the other things. Cosmetic at best. Band-aid, maybe. bubble gum and a little glue. It doesn't last. It's phony. You know, ask any teenager, they'll tell you. It's phony. And we do it all the time. Like, you know, it makes us comfortable. Because we don't want to close that gap, cross that threshold into that space that's like different than our comfort zone. But if we're honest, we're being inattentive to Krishna. That's the problem. That's the problem that brought us here. And that's the same thing that keeps us here. We have to address that problem. We can't just like, you know, go around and around and try to keep putting out fires when the real issue remains. Chanting gives us an opportunity to directly address that. But we don't even have any attraction for chanting. You know, this is humility. The problem is over here. The problem is not all this other stuff. The problem is over here. I don't have attraction for Krishna. So, what do you do? You can't focus your attention upon Krishna. You don't chant. No, that's not an answer. Because go back, in any circumstance, chant. That's number one, chant. But now our attention needs to go to hearing, to be attentive to chanting the holy name. So what we're going to ask in small letters, we'll put one mantra at a time. After here, so you're going to need that space. One mantra at a time. So to hear, let's do some real simple math. Can you hear the mantra that you chanted yesterday or this morning? No. Can you hear the mantra that you didn't chant yet later today or tomorrow morning? No. It's possible to hear the mantra that you're chanting right now. So practice hearing by hearing one mantra at a time. But one of the things that it's a common principle in stress management is that people get on the mental platform about something that happened in the past, and they all this anxiety about something that happened in the past. Why did this happen? Maybe something happened to them or something they did that was a mistake, and they're in this, you know, the mind starts to grow and grow and grow about something in the past or something in the future that didn't happen yet. Am I going to get that job? Am I, you know, is this thing, this mean person, you know, the mind goes. That's a formula for anxiety and stress. And stress management is don't worry, you know, don't spend your time in the past and the futures. Be present. Be in the moment. That's not yet Krishna conscious. There are lots of impersonalists, with a big lots of impersonalists, that amplify this notion. When I was going to college, a popular book was Be Here Now by so-and-so. And it was, you know, that's how you realize Brahman is not so much the past and not so much the future, but more and more be present in the moment. But lo and behold, There's another very popular book today, I forget what that title is, but it's something, it's along the same time. The, you know, the magic of the moment, or this, the mystery of the moment, and it's just impersonal. And, you know, to go beyond duality and become, you know, merge with nothingness. Yummy. In right in Nectar Devotion, Prabhupada, well, maybe it was his lecture on Nectar Devotion, he likens the ananda of Brahman to be like a person that's banging their head against the wall, and it, you know, it hurts, and then they stop. Ah. Or, I've said this many times, but my office in New York is right by the street. And right below the street where the temple is the A train. And when the A train goes through, the whole street vibrates. And, you know, people that aren't used to being there, that live in California, they think, oh my God, it's an earthquake. Because the whole building shakes and you can hear a rumbling sound. It's the train going through. They say, no, it's okay, it's the A train. They can't sleep at night because it's, they're like, you know, an earthquake every 10 minutes. But it's not only the building vibrates and the street vibrates, but the cars that are parked that have auto alarms that go off when somebody, you know, is trying to break into the car. The car vibrates and the alarm goes off. So it's a regular thing. Kind of gotten used to it, but regularly people that park their cars in the street and the A train goes through at a certain time, their auto alarm starts to go off, and you know what those things sound like. And there's like this chorus of fire of auto alarms, and it just keeps going until the people come out for the lunch break and turn it off. Ah. Brahman. And what one's positive spiritual happiness is, don't mind that. Just turn that auto alarm off. So, this problem that we have in our chanting, that our attention, the mouth is going, the attention is going elsewhere. And where does that attention, where is that elsewhere that the attention goes to? Practically anything but Krishna. You name it. One devotee told me, Maharaj, yeah, what is it? I got this problem. Okay, what variety? As soon as I put my hand in my bead bag, my mind starts to go, even before I chant. And then when I'm chanting, it just keeps going. As soon as I take my hand out of my bead bag, it's okay again. I'm telling you the truth. That's what they said. So, what do you say to a person like that? You just keep chanting. And understand that will all subside. Chinta Darpa Namarjanam, right? Bhava Maha Davagni Nirvapanam, right? Shreya, so just keep chanting with faith. But there's some effort that needs to be made to bring our attention to Krishna. It's something we have to do. And, okay, that mantra that I just chanted or whole round was really sloppy. My mind was all over the place. Okay, now let's chant this next mantra properly. So this one is going to appear several times, but one mantra at a time. And hopefully this will be helpful for you tomorrow, because tomorrow is our 64-round day. This is preparation for us. These are things that can help you when you're chanting 64 rounds tomorrow and your regular number of rounds each other day. Next one is sankalpa. We did this at the very beginning, for those of you that were with us. Sankalpa means a number of things. It means fixing your determination or resolving within your mind something. In Vedic rituals, it's a specific part of a ritual. In the there's the invocation of the bhokta of the yajna, Lord Vishnu. Then there's the utterance of the particular devata that one is approaching for something. There's the request made to Ganesh to remove the obstacles, and then you state the intention. Sankalpa. So like practically the whole thing revolves around the sankalpa. What's your intention? What is it that you want? So we, the question was asked in this way, what do you hope to achieve by coming here to Gita Nagari and attending the japa retreat? What was that sankalpa? What's your intention? What is it that you would like? And, you know, as stated it differently, as a spiritual desire. What is that? And spiritual desires are good. They help you be focused. So that's what a sankalpa does. So as you're trying to hear, it's invoking or connecting again with or resonating with the explicit intended purpose for the activity, the sacrament, the yajna, the sacrifice of chanting the holy name. It will help you to hear and chant properly. So now you're doing your chanting, let's say tomorrow on 64 round day, and you start off okay. Maybe it's a little different. Maybe it's you're struggling right from the get-go. But at some point, most likely there's going to be a struggle period, whether it's in the beginning, in the middle, or somewhere in there. Struggling period. Now what do? Go back to continue chanting. Remember the glories of the holy name. Shikshastakam 1. Then how merciful Krishna is, and he's making himself personally available. Okay, I know that, but I'm still, I don't have any, my mind's not going there. Remember, there's behind then, we, you know, that's our regular program. Now we're here to do a different program. And let me focus on the spiritual aspiration, the sankalpa. And it's not happening. See, revisit those steps. Now what do? The instruction that Krishna gives in Bhagavad Gita, it's in the sixth chapter, in Dhyan Yoga, is you try to bring the mind back. So we're going to put number 4. Bring the mind back. Yato yato nishchalati chala. Flickering. Unsteady. Manas chanchalam astiram tatastato niyamyaitad atman eva visham nayat. Due to its flickering and unsteady nature, the mind is always wandering, but one should bring the mind back under the control of the self. From whatever and wherever the mind wanders, yato, yato. nishchalati. It's the mind that's wandering, and bring the mind back. Okay, I brought the mind back, it just went away again. Then bring the mind back, and it goes away again. Bring however many times. It's a discipline of the mind. It's something like a dog on a leash. The dog goes running. You pull on the leash. Maybe shorten the leash. Bring the mind back. However many times the mind goes, you bring, and by practice, remember this one from yesterday, habit is second nature, or habit becomes second nature. Get in the habit of bringing the mind back. However many times, doesn't matter, bring the mind back under the control of the self. You know, from asat to sat, from whatever and wherever to the holy name. So the faculty that disciplines the mind is the intelligence above, right? Above matter is the senses, above the senses is the mind, above the mind is intelligence. But we're going to cover this in a moment, but it requires spiritual intelligence. Because material intelligence will help the mind go elsewhere. Because while the mind is going elsewhere, the intelligence gets invoked, saying, I'll help you get that thing. For those persons that have the good fortune of a nice education, it can be the immediate buddy of your biggest enemy. Not your biggest enemy, but the biggest helper of your biggest enemy, the mind that's uncontrolled. The intelligence will help the mind, you know, like, get it done. And we're habituated to giving this material intelligence thing, or entity, lots to do. We pride ourselves in it. We're like really practiced at it. It's like that path that we're very familiar with. And now we're chanting and that guy has nothing to do. We're restless. So the something to do is to help the mind figure out how to like work that plan out of the thing that you're going to do today or next week or whenever, and you know, figure out how to fix that problem back there in time. And you know, they're partners, the mind and the intelligence. So, I'm trying to bring the mind back, and trying to bring the mind back, and trying to bring the mind back, and I'm not getting tired of bringing the mind, I'm not getting worn out, but I'll lose my patience unless I'm simply in the mode of service. So be detached, however many times. It's not the outcome and conquering, because we're not going to conquer the mind. The mind has already conquered us. It's continue in that position of service, and simply as a service, because Krishna has ordered it. Then, as long as you're up on the board, neglect the mind is number six. That's one of the ways that helps you stay in this detached mode. But specifically, another instruction that Krishna gives in the Bhagavad Gita, in the 14th chapter. From the mode of goodness, real knowledge develops. From the mode of passion, greed develops, and from the mode of ignorance, foolishness, madness, and illusion develop. So, I'm going to spend some time on this neglect the mind because of its importance. And I'm going to get up and make some marks. Can you get me another page? I'm not really an artist, but I'm going to pretend. Conscious, because we're part and parcel of Krishna. So we're this is the Atma. He's got form, but that's Krishna, representing Krishna. Okay. So we received an invitation from Krishna to rejoin him. And he's making himself available in his fullness, personally, through his holy name. So we want to establish this connection. But there's always a problem. And it's called, it has three different names. Do we have another color pen? Marker. I don't know how to draw this properly, but the mind. There's the mind. And we know from Bhagavad Gita the mind is the repository of conceptions of life. And in conditioned life, we accept the mind as authority. We accept the mind as actually us. And the mind makes its proposals. And it says, it's like a child. I want this. Now! And connected to the mind is this, or part of the subtle body is this, that's the false ego that's got us, our real identity covered. And I want something in relation to what I'm not. Now! So there's this little connection over here to intelligence. Now, intelligence gets the instruction from the chief, the mind. I want this now. And intelligence says, reporting from duty, sir. Yes, sir. I can figure out how to get it done. I've went to school for many years. I may have to take a couple of extra courses, but I'll get it done for you. Hire me, please. I'm your servant. So, We know from Kapila Dev's teaching that what mode of nature does intelligence arise from?
Passion.
Passion. I don't know how we make passion. Okay, explain. Anyway, passion. So we're over here trying to chant the holy name, mind saying, I want this now, or something like that. And the intelligence gets all worked up, saying, I'll try to take care of it, you know. I'm a good servant. And we've just contacted the mode of passion. And then over here is this mode of ignorance, that, you know, this misidentification, our real identity, the root cause of all suffering is ignorance. And they're buddies, passion and ignorance. And we're over here trying to chant the holy name, taking the mind as our authority. So, just during the break, before prasadam, one devotee came and shared, you know, I'm over here trying to chant the holy name, and my mind is saying, you know, I've got to take care of this important service. You know, you fill in the blank. I got to do my homework. Or I got to finish this project. Or, you know, somebody did this to me and I have to, you know, take care of it. Or something. The mind is making its demand. And that's our authority. And the intelligence is going, yeah, here's a good plan to take care of this. I'll do it for you. I'll help you. We're over in this zone of modes of nature, trying to chant the holy name. We're not paying attention to the holy name. We're paying attention to the authority that we accept. That's filling us with this, what we're not, modes of nature. You know, we're on this whole cloud of false ego, who we aren't. And we're stuck, apparently. So, one of the advices that Krishna is giving is this neglect of the mind. And factually, please take note tomorrow, during those wonderful moments when you're chanting with attention, what happens to the mind, this, you know, authority of stuff? It's absent. It's not pressing on you. It's very, very distant when you're absorbed. So there's a time for all things. We have to be responsible in our duties of life. So the project that has to get done, or the homework that has to get done, or taking care of something that has to get done, our dutiful side of life, maybe even a tax side of life too, but, you know, those things have their time. There's this Old Testament saying, there's a time for all things. There's a season for all things. It's just part of how God made creation. So, there's a time to get your project done, there's a time to get your homework done, there's a time to take care of this problem and that situation. And if you want to do that more effectively, chant attentively. Chant, and even better is chant attentively. I mean, it's one of the first realizations I had in chanting of the holy name is it enabled me to do everything more effectively, and I had more time to do everything just from chanting. It didn't like, you know, people sometimes come up with this, you know, how do I balance between this and that? From my perspective, it's not, balance sounds like, you know, either or. And it's not either or. Prabhupada didn't give us the either or. We have a priority, and following the priority, the other comes. It's not neglecting something that's very important. But we give primary attention to the primary thing, and the secondary things receive energy from the primary thing. So neglecting that the mind doesn't like to let go of the position of being the authority. Nobody likes to let go of the position of being, having been authority for so long, who wants to let go? The mind is such an entity. But there is a matter of saying, please sit down, be quiet. Or one of the ways that Prabhupada said is, my dear mind, you've been in charge for countless lifetimes, and I must say you haven't been doing a great job. So just this one lifetime, sit down. You're not ruling this lifetime. Krishna is ruling this lifetime. I'm dedicating this one lifetime to serving Krishna. Your needs will be taken care of at the same time, but you're not ruling anymore. Please be quiet. Please be quiet. And just continue. And, you know, like those of you that have trained a child or have been one for long enough that you know what it's like to be trained. Repeating in a kind voice, but in a firm voice. No. So there's part of it is being able to say no with assuredness is making a strong yes. So one of the retreats that we had some time ago in Giranagari was say yes to Krishna. I noticed that when Nityananda Pran was interviewed for that, we had a little video of the 30th anniversary living in Rogers Park. He had to say yes to Krishna button on. Yeah, you saw? So it's, you know, say a strong enough yes to Krishna and all of that other fades. It doesn't like, you're not irresponsible, but you're not giving power of attorney to the mind either. In fact, turning over, abdicating your real position to a false position. The false authority of the mind. There's a nice example of this from Srila Prabhupada's time when in a morning walk conversation Prabhupada was discussing chanting Hare Krishna. And he was describing that in the course of chanting Hare Krishna it's necessary to become an offenseless chanter. It's a morning walk conversation in Hawaii. And Prabhupada said during this morning walk, offenseless chanting is the ultimate goal. In the beginning, we are not offenseless, but by chanting, by practice, we gradually become offenseless. But this is necessary that you should be offenseless. Pause. One of the persons in the morning walk said to Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, it's very difficult to control the mind. When I chant, it wanders. Srila Prabhupada's reply, so, what is the controlling of mind? You have to hear. You have to chant and hear. That's all. You have to chant with your tongue and the sound you hear. That's all. What's the question of mind? Huh? Neglect the mind. You know, a strong enough yes to what you're supposed to do equals you neglect that this other thing that we're all too familiar with, taking dictation from the mind. And once again, when you're chanting very nicely, you can appreciate this fact. You won't even go off on a mental tangent about it. Just take note that all of that noise is subsided when you're chanting nicely. So when you're not chanting nicely, it's going on, even you're trying these other, can we go back to the other page? You're trying these other things, 1 through 5, and now you're being firm. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said it, same thing in a different way, about how to best control the mind. He gave 2 formulas. Beat the mind with a stick, and the other is neglect the mind. In fact, he expanded on it, that at night, 100 times you beat the mind with a stick, broomstick, and in the morning, first thing, beat the mind 100 times with your shoes. So some devotees heard that and they literally took a shoe and started beating it. That's not what it means. Not beat your head with a shoe. It's metaphorically command the mind into submission by firmness. And in a manner of speech, one can do that. It's effective. Or the other is neglect. I've shared this experience before, but it fits, so I'll share it again. I was many years ago visiting in Potomac Temple, and I was staying in that little garage they call a guest house. And I was going, somebody was with me, I don't remember who it was, we went for a japa walk in that, you know, the Potomac Temple neighborhood. The Potomac Temple neighborhood is all these super expensive houses. They have yards big enough to like have a golf course on. And then just down the street is a golf course. But you know, big houses, big yards, and big dogs. Really big dogs. So I was, you know, going for a japa walk, and this gigantic Labrador retriever came from the house. He saw us, and he came galloping down like a horse. And I was thinking, take shelter of Srila Prabhupada's instruction and just neglect. Just neglect. So, literally, I wasn't afraid. I had faith in Prabhupada's instruction and just neglect. I just kept walking. He came galloping down and down and down and right up to the street and rawr, showing his teeth, look at this, you know. Just kept walking. He looked at us and more or less shrugged his shoulders and went back up the hill. Then another time, I was in Vrindavan teaching at the VIHE. And those of you that have had experience of being in the VIHE classes, there's this thing they call the fishbowl. It's like, you know, the way the school was designed, the Gurukul building, it's this open space in the middle, kind of like a courtyard, and then on 3 floors of rooms all the way around. And, you know, Vrindavan is a very wonderful place. It's a place for purification. And those that stay in that space for the whole month, it gets really intense. Burijan calls it the pressure cooker. So I found I had to, you know, like get out of the pressure cooker for at least for some part of the day. So we'd take a japa walk. And, you know, the cool of the morning during Kartik and you're in Vrindavan and memories of going along that Ramanriti road with Srila Prabhupada and chanting the holy name. And it was really, really nice. So one morning, I just kind of got carried away with how long the walk was, and I was halfway to Mathura. I was a long, long distance, and It was the night was just ending, and it was just the beginning part of the where light was coming, but he couldn't really see things clearly because there was no street lights that far down. And one dog woke up and heard me. And, you know, he woof. And then the echo of the other four or five dogs. Woof, 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 woof. Those of you from India, you know what that is all about. And then they got up. I could feel the energy coming toward me. So I had my dunda with me. Then another thing that I remembered, Prabhupada, with dogs, you say hut. I don't know what language, dog language that means, but I held out my dunda, and at the top of my lungs, because they were, you know, chomp. They weren't just like growling. They were ready to attack. So I held my dunda out and shook it three times very loudly, hot. And they looked at each other. They looked at the stick. They looked at each other. They looked at the stick, shrugged their shoulders, and went back and laid down. Similarly, to control the mind, neglect or a stick. So it takes care of all that other stuff, the mind being in this position of our authority, what to speak of taking that as our identity, and the material intelligence. It doesn't break like, you know, just so quickly. But if you're strengthened by the instruction of Krishna to do so, the instruction of spiritual master to do so, or combination, Guru and Krishna to do so, you can, tomorrow, when the mind is doing that thing, demanding your attention instead of paying attention to the holy name, neglect the mind. Try it. And in that neglecting of the mind, you withdraw investment of consciousness in the asat and invest consciousness in sat. You invest your attentiveness in the holy name. Okay. So I see here a little exercise. Does it fit? Okay. So now this is to internalize subjectively, assimilate these teachings in a practice.
So we're just going to spend a few minutes just practicing these six keys that Maharaj talked about. So first we'll chant maybe like three mantras together. Before we do that, let's try to evoke this principle, the sankalpa, the determination to chant one mantra at a time. And just focus on hearing one mantra at a time and don't worry about anything else. Be detached. Let the mind go here and there. Don't worry about it. So let's just chant a few times together.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So how many of you felt like you heard a little bit better? Okay, so we're going to chant some more. But try to make a firmer determination this time to really just hear the mantra that we're chanting right now. Don't worry about the previous mantra. If you didn't pay attention to it, that's okay. You still have the current mantra, and don't worry how I'll do in the next mantra and so on. Just make a firm determination. And the mind plays many, many tricks, as Maharaj very nicely talked about. Don't worry about, it'll start talking after some time, after you chant a couple of mantras very attentively. Then it'll say, well, I wonder what prasadam is for lunch. You know, quinoa and raita was nice for breakfast, but I wonder what's there for lunch. Or, you know, why does Prema Tarangini have to talk after every class of Maharaj? Maharaj talks so beautifully, and she's just like blabber something here. Or something else. Or the person next to me is chanting so loudly. Or, you know, then we chant a few mantras nicely, and oh, I'm chanting so nicely. And then we lose it, and the mind starts talking again. Or we start, and we've heard many times that chanting even one mantra attentively is very, very wonderful. So we start to chant a few mantras attentively, and then we start thinking, oh, I'm so fortunate. Look at all these hundreds of people all around. You know, I wonder what they're doing. You know, they're wasting their lives. You know, we're so fortunate. I'm in this japa retreat. I'm receiving so much. And, you know, varieties of things. Or the other direction it goes is, oh, I just can't do it anyway. Forget it. I'll just, you know, quit Krishna consciousness or forget about chanting. Or I can't really pay attention to the one mantra, so I'll just go back to the first key, just chant anyway, which is okay. But let's not lose determination so easily. So let's try to chant together for a little bit, and then you can chant at your own pace for a little bit more, and then Maharaj will resume.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama.
Now you can chant at your own pace. Please hear the mantra you're chanting now. We can stop now, in the interest of time. So we're just going to spend a few minutes just practicing these six keys that Maharaj talked about. So first we'll chant maybe like three mantras together. But before we do that, let's try to evoke this principle, the sankalpa, the determination to chant one mantra at a time. And just focus on hearing one mantra at a time, and don't worry about anything else. Be detached. Let the mind go here and there. Don't worry about it. So let's just chant a few times together.
Hare Krishna, Hare,
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
So how many of you felt like you heard a little bit better? Okay. So we're going to chant some more. But try to make a firmer determination this time to really just hear the mantra that we're chanting right now. Don't worry about the previous mantra. If you didn't pay attention to it, that's okay. You still have the current mantra. And don't worry how I'll do in the next mantra and so on. Just make a firm determination. And the mind plays many, many tricks, as Maharaj very nicely talked about. Don't worry about, it'll start talking after some time, after you chant a couple of mantras very attentively. Then it'll say, well, I wonder what prasadam is for lunch. You know, quinoa and raita was nice for breakfast, but I wonder what's there for lunch. Or, you know, why does Prema Tarangini have to talk after every class of Maharaj? Maharaj talks so beautifully, and she's just like blabber something here. Or something else. Or the person next to me is chanting so loudly. Or, you know, then we chant a few mantras nicely, and, oh, I'm chanting so nicely. And then we lose it, and the mind starts talking again. Or we start, and we've heard many times that chanting even one mantra attentively is very, very wonderful. So we start to chant a few mantras attentively, and then we start thinking, oh, I'm so fortunate. Look at all these hundreds of people all around. You know, I wonder what they're doing. You know, they're wasting their lives. You know, we're so fortunate. I'm in this japa retreat. I'm receiving so much. And, you know, varieties of things. Or the other direction it goes is, oh, I just can't do it anyway. Forget it. I'll just, you know, quit Krishna consciousness or forget about chanting. Or I can't really pay attention to the one mantra, so I'll just go back to the first key, just chant anyway, which is okay. But let's not lose determination so easily. So let's try to chant together for a little bit, and then you can chant at your own pace for a little bit more, and then Maharaj will resume.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama.
Now you can chant at your own pace. Please hear the mantra you're chanting now. We can stop now, in the interest of time.
That's it. Hearing one mantra at a time. Very powerful. Okay, so we're going to move on to the next Shikshastakam verse. I'll again speak the overview is Bhaktivinoda Thakur is guiding us in taking this resource that Lord Chaitanya has given, Shikshastakam verses, and helping to move us along as a meditation in moving along in the development of our Krishna consciousness, the awakening of our relationship with Krishna. So that the second Shikshastakam verse ended with the Dor Daivam Idrisham Mahajani Nanuraga. How unfortunate that I have no attraction. And our Acharya's comment, we have no attraction because we're making offenses. And to overcome the offenses, particularly to overcome the offense of inattentiveness, Lord Chaitanya then supplies this third. So we'll chant together. Trinadapi sunichena tarorapi sahishnuna amanina manadena kirtaniya sadahari. I'll recite. One should chant the holy name of the Lord in a humble state of mind, thinking oneself lower than the straw in the street. One should be more tolerant than a tree, devoid of all sense of false prestige, and should be ready to offer all respect to others. In such a state of mind, one can chant the holy name of the Lord constantly. You can't chant the holy name of the Lord constantly unless there's some attraction. You can't do anything consistently over a period of time unless there's some attraction for that something. So as with the other verses, we'll go through the meanings. Trinnadapi. Trin means straw. So like straw. And sunichena. Nicha in Sanskrit means low. And sunicha means very low. And sunichena is lower than the lowest, more than sunicha. Lower than a straw in the street. Lower than a blade of grass or a straw in the street. It doesn't mean what psychologists speak today about low self-esteem, thinking badly about yourself. But it's a spiritual conception. It's distancing yourself from the puffed up false pride, false egotism of something that Krishna has endowed you with, and instead understanding your factual position as a tiny spirit soul. This little atomic entity, the tininess of the soul. More tolerant than a tree. Specifically, using Prabhupada's phrase, the scorching heat and the pinching cold. Then Prabhupada would sometimes say, biting cold, biting, pinching. I can only imagine what his experience was the first year that he was in New York City. Used to living in Vrindavan, where it's scorching heat, and coming to America where it's cold. Vrindavan is cold, but not like New York City, pinching cold. And a tree can't put a jacket on or anything. Just has to stand there. Just tolerate. And in the course of tolerating, not withdrawing service while you're tolerating. I'm sorry, I can't pay attention to the service that you need because I'm too busy tolerating this scorching heat or the pinching cold or how someone is cutting off a limb to use for wood or taking flowers and fruits or chopping the tree down or digging a hole looking for insects or just rendering service. It's providing whatever the tree has. Its branches, its fruits and flowers, its shade, its shelter from the rain, or from the wind. just serving and continuing to tolerate whatever the circumstances that the elements of material nature are providing or other living beings are providing. More tolerant than a tree. Toror is a tree. Amanina. Look up this word. If you have a Sanskrit dictionary, you look it up in your word search with folio, and mana. It has to do with obviously the mind, but it's the sense of importance that the mind holds. Again, this like pride resting within the mind. So, amanina, a sense of pridelessness, of not wishing to receive respect. So many statements are there in Prabhupada's teachings that expand on this idea, amanitvam, adambitvam. In the Items of Knowledge, 13th chapter, texts 8 through 12, Bhagavad Gita, the first two items of knowledge are humility, amanitvam, and pridelessness, adambitvam. Before you can have, this is now spiritual knowledge, there has to be humility and the absence of pride. So the person who is proud, they're expecting honor. And if they don't get honor, they're agitated. The mind becomes agitated. And it's not just, you know, kings, you know, puffed up kings or persons in a big position thinking, but even, you know, a simple person, it's one thing to not be respected. It's one thing to be disrespected, but persons who are expecting respect and don't receive respect, the mind becomes agitated. So the advice to become free from that problem is to always offer respect to others. That's one thing. Not some of the times. Always to offer respect to others. But the other one is more difficult. Without any expectation of respect in return. Because, I mean, I've heard this a million times. You know, I was always nice to that person and, you know, look what they did to me. Da 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 da. And the mind becomes agitated. And you could say that's human. But it's not spiritual. It's not what's going to allow us to achieve connection with our relationship with Krishna. It's a spiritual form of humility. That's what Lord Chaitanya is advocating in this verse. It will permit us to chant and hear where we're simply being present with Krishna. We'll go back to this thing that I said before. Any unwanted behavior or mental state we don't like, but you know it happens. The root of it is our disconnectedness with Krishna. So to establish the connectedness with Krishna, this is the advice that Lord Chaitanya has given, or instruction that he's giving. Maintain this humility. And you can't maintain humility minus a spiritual conception of life. We'll say it the other way. As long as you hold on to a bodily conception of life, you will not be able to manifest and sustain humility. And I'll say it the other way again. Humility, real humility, is not dependent upon the circumstance. It's spiritually based. So the circumstance can be this or that. Duality is going to manifest this, and then again it'll manifest that, and then again it'll be this, and then again it'll be that. And real humility isn't dependent upon circumstance. It's not generated or taken away by circumstance. It's the conception of who you are. And a spiritual conception of who you are is this infinitesimal spiritual spark that is supported or sheltered by the fact that we're part and parcel of Krishna, meant for his service. That's who we are. So then we can easily be very humble, because what's there to not be humble about? Because all that other stuff is not who I am. And then comes the yeah, but. Yeah, but. The whining and, you know. Or, I'm not there yet. Okay, practice it. Take little steps towards it. Keep recognizing that's the goal, this gap thing again, where we are and what we know. So you practice it. To your capacity, you practice it. And if you slip, you get up and you stand again and you practice it. You continue to practice it. Because it's like the walking capacity of a child that doesn't yet walk. The innate walking capacity is there. And how do they learn to walk? They keep practicing. One little step, wobbly, another little step, wobbly, and they tumble. And look at what happened. And get up, and another little baby step, and another little baby step, and they tumble. And they get up again, and just after, repeat it, because the muscles aren't developed yet, but the capacity is there. And it comes out. So, what to speak of something material? This is something spiritual. It's foundational, fundamental to our identity. Humility is our natural position. This other stuff is a diseased position. Practice it. It becomes your second nature because it's actually your first nature. The other is just conditioning. So it's cultivation. While chanting, and tomorrow you're chanting your 64 rounds, and enter into the mood of this tiny spark calling out Krishna's name that's invested with the unlimited potencies of all that Krishna has in each and every one of his holy names, and he's making himself personally present. How fortunate we are. And take shelter of that mood of humility, and all the rest of the time, cultivate it also when you're serving in your various capacities of life. In this humble mood. Very tolerant. Always serving, and regardless of circumstance, serving. Without protest. Oh, look at this circumstance. Oh, look at that circumstance. Continuing to serve in all circumstances. Offering respect to others. What about people that don't deserve respect? That can be a problem, isn't it? There's some people that, you know, the teaching doesn't say, well, you offer respect to people that are deserving respect and you can disrespect the other people, that's okay. That's not what the verse says. That's maybe what we're doing, but it's not what the verse says. Offering respect to others. So, where is respect that's worthy, not just like, you know, dumb? Respect goes to this intrinsic worth of the other living being that's part and parcel of Krishna. What to speak of that living entity has some shelter taking in Krishna desire in their heart. I respect that. Using the same language again, the intrinsic worth of that soul. I respect that. And what's my expectation in return? There's no expectation in return. It's my constitutional position to offer to take shelter of Krishna, to have proper regard for others. When this is very meaningful for me personally, it's meaning for all of us, but I had this existential dilemma when I was in the form of Christianity that I took part in. I certainly don't remember baptism. I'm sure that that happened when I was a little baby. You sprinkle some water on your head and you're baptized. So then when you, something that's similar in Vedic culture to Upanayana ceremony, where you of your own volition, now you're a teenager, and is this what I want to be? Do I want to be connected to God? So they have this thing that's called confirmation class. Teenagers take confirmation class and talk about stuff. It doesn't go anywhere because nobody knows anything and the teacher doesn't know anything. So it's like, huh? Confirmation in what? Chaos. But anyway, I was raising this question that didn't have an answer. And so I started asking myself, and I didn't have an answer either. And anybody else I asked, I didn't get an answer. So I just kind of threw my hands up in the air and said, maybe someday I'll get an answer. But the question was, the teaching that Christ gives is, one of the teachings is to love thy neighbor as thyself. And my existential dilemma was, well, if I'm going to call myself a Christian, and this is, he's identified as this is a fundamental message that he wanted to give, because his disciples asked, the 12 principal ones asked this question, what's the principal teachings out of all the teachings? Love thy neighbor as thyself. And for me, that was tough because, I was a teenager and I saw unlovable things that people were doing and it bothered me. But now I have this teaching that says I'm supposed to love these people. And I didn't love those people. I saw them doing lots of not nice things and I didn't love them. Then what was I supposed to do? I didn't get any answers. And I didn't have any myself until I came to Krishna consciousness. And it's built into this amanina manadena and trinada piece, and it's there. But you can't actually, you can pretend. You can't actually love thy neighbor as thyself unless you get on a spiritual platform. Huh? Means, love is on the spiritual platform. Huh? Love is something else, isn't it? What love is, it's not on the spiritual platform. It's on the spiritual platform, and it's preceded by love God with all your heart, with all your mind, with all your strength. Then following that is love your neighbor as yourself. You can't, without God in the center, with a spiritual conception of who is God and what relationship with God is, it's like that thing from yesterday about this woman for 30 years who was reading Ramayana and chanting Sita Ram and felt she wasn't getting anywhere. At least, religiously, she was doing some religious duty, but she didn't feel any movement, any transformation of heart. So same for us. We're practicing Krishna consciousness, and we I don't know how to say this sufficiently strong, but, amplify it a couple hundred times. And we really need to connect with Krishna. This humility has to be there. Humility on a spiritual platform where it doesn't change. It's not created by circumstance or disappear under certain circumstances. We just kind of lose our humility. Then we'll just be swept away like the wind is blowing right now and the leaves are just flying in the air. Because the wind is blowing. So we can be like that, just like get blown around by the circumstances and maybe be peaceful when the wind isn't blowing. That's not what humility is. It's non-circumstantial. And where we just want to serve, regardless of the elements, regardless of other people, we just serve because we want to serve. And we want to offer respect. We're not looking within our mind for respect. We want to offer respect on the spiritual platform. In such a state of mind, one can chant the holy name of the Lord constantly when you're connected. Okay, so could you go to the board with three colors? Here's two of them. Flip the page to a clean page. One more. Clean page. Very good. Now we're going to do a mathematical formula. This plus this equals that. Okay. We're going to put on the left side, allow for three things. Well, maybe we'll do it like go down. Humility, upper left. Maybe it should be the lower left. Okay. Now at the bottom right, intense and focused shelter in the holy name. Intense? That's where we want to go. Okay, so what happens? We want to cultivate humility because Lord Chaitanya teaches it in Shikshastakam 3 that unless you're humble, unless this spiritually quality of humility is there, this other thing isn't going to be achieved. So what do you do? How to get that humility? Try for intense and focused shelter in the holy name. And what happens? It doesn't happen. That's what happens. Then the more you try, the more you the achiever's mode kicks in. I can do it. Look at all my list of accomplishments. I've achieved so many things. I can do it. What happens? It doesn't happen. So then comes this middle. You have to add an ingredient. This sense of need, needing mercy. But put mercy in green, green, green. Can make intense need for mercy. Krishna! It's not just like Krishna. Krishna! Different quality, isn't it? Krishna. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare. Krishna, Krishna. Other things get displaced. That the descending mercy enters and picks us up. And the other things are displaced. So, thank you very much. What happened to the green one? There's no green one. Okay. Okay. I'll put a plus. Humility plus mercy equals. Put a long equals. Long one. Going down. Down. No, just like an equal sign. Yeah, like that. Math. College education, come on. It's not a one, it's a zero. Hare Krishna. In one of the morning ragas, that along with the same morning raga as our samsara, samsara dava nandalida loka, is a song by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Udila Aruna. It's a song that as the sun is rising and its rays are shining, wake up, wake up, Jeev Jago, wake up. And one of the lines is, Namashraya Kori Jatane Tumi Takaha Apana Kaje. Namashraya Kori. Kori. Taking shelter of the holy name. Jatane means carefully. Tumi is like an instruction. You take, you can instruct the mind or you can instruct the person. And we instruct the person, the mind goes with the person, as long as the mind's cooperating. Namashraya kori jatane tumi takaha apane kaje. Remain always engaged in his service. So it's instructing the mind or instructing the person in this position of take shelter of the holy name. Bhaktivinoda Thakur's writings and his songs are filled with wonderful inspirations and beautiful instructions about taking shelter of the holy name and what happens when you do and the conditions necessary to help you and what happens when you don't. Humility expresses I must. So what that sense of urgency, the need, when there's humility and there's a sincere application of oneself in trying to fulfill a spiritual instruction genuinely, just like love thy neighbor as thyself. Without mercy, without a spiritual conception, is getting a spiritual conception is part of mercy. I didn't have anybody to give me the spiritual conception. I was stuck. Couldn't go forward. It didn't leave me, but I didn't have an answer. I could fudge one, but I didn't have one. Honestly, I didn't have one. But the opportunity is there. When there's proper teachings and proper teachers and proper guides, we have the opportunity to collect ourselves and get this deeper sense of shelter. So I'm going to conclude with this, see if there's some questions, discussion, and then we'll continue later this afternoon. That the next item, you don't have to put it on, but the next item that we'll cover is Namashraya, and that is covered in the verse that follows, Shikshastakam 4. What propels moving to the next stage is genuine humility, spiritual conception humility, that then dictates, I need mercy. It's not like optional, take it or leave it. I need mercy. And it intensifies as one sincerely applies oneself to proper spiritual practice and proper spiritual teachings. Trinadapi Sunichan is built within. I have no hope because of this tiny position of that I'm factually in. I need mercy. I need the mercy of the holy name. Krishna, please be merciful. Please accept me. Please give your mercy. Please give me your shelter. that it's a further unfolding of the white lotus of good fortune. Shreya Chairava Chandrika Vidharanam. It's this expression of the soul's hankering to be again situated in a relationship with Krishna. And on my own strength, I don't have the capacity. I need the strength of Krishna along with my own effort. I need this mercy. I can't go on being in this mediocrity mode, this complacent mode, this comfort zone mode. I want to go to my relationship with Krishna. And I can't on my own. I need your mercy. Krishna, please accept me. That's a furthering stage that unfolds as Shikshastakam unfolds. Okay, so I had intended to begin with allowing questions that didn't happen this morning, and I forgot. So, if there's any questions left over from this morning or whatever on these topics, please raise them now. Jai Jagannath. Hey, look at—he's got his own little microphone.
Maharaj, from this morning's discussion.
Yeah.
I had a question regarding, you were explaining how even when foolish people to make fun, chant the holy name, they get benefited. I was wondering, what is the understanding regarding persons like Mayavadis who are intentionally inimical and not just ignorant when they're chanting the holy name?
Well, what happened to Shishupal? He wasn't an impersonalist, but what happened to Shishupal? He got liberation. So, you know, they're offenders because they're thinking of Krishna's name in a wrong way. They're not just like mistaken, they're offenders. But Krishna is merciful even to such persons. The fullness that the holy name has to offer will never be accessed by them. So that's cut. But it's something like, you know, the rays of the sun are benefiting even people that hide under rocks, because the warmth that comes from the sun is benefiting the people that live under the rocks. If they hide themselves from Krishna or offend Krishna, Krishna is all merciful. So how he deals with them may look like, you know, for a Vaishnav, great misfortune, in the sense that they're shutting themselves off completely from the opportunity of a direct relationship with Krishna. It's the most unfortunate thing. On the other hand, Krishna can neutralize their karmas and their gunas and situate them as they so desire. Krishna can give them liberation. But they cannot stay in that position. Oh, fortunate in a limited sense and ultimately unfortunate. Something else?
Thank you very much, Maharaj, for your wonderful class. I have a question regarding, currently I'm facing a stage wherein I'm feeling very insensitive or like impersonal to this mercy, like, I don't know.
You're being insensitive and impersonal? Or someone is being impersonal
being
insensitive towards you?
I'm being insensitive. Like, how do I get out of this situation?
Be sensitive and personal. The answer to your question is like Prabhupada's answer to the question, how do you become sincere? And Prabhupada's answer is by being sincere. And then he continued by saying, everybody knows what it means to be sincere. So be sincere. You practice being sincere and you become sincere. Practice being sensitive and personal and it'll happen. That means, you know, the converse is implicit. You should be attentive to statements or actions that are insensitive. Or another how-to item is consider, one word is empathy, consider how you would want someone to address you were the roles reversed. How would you want someone to treat you and treat them that way? That's a good way to become personal and sensitive. The answer that Prabhupada gave, which I also, in essence, gave you, though, is it's not so much a technique, a how-to, like there's a technique. It's a matter of a desire to do so. When the desire to do so is there, you practice it. Here's another little here's a lesson that I learned from my godbrother Sridhar Swami. He, in his IQ scores, scored really high. So he knew he had a big IQ. So because he had a big IQ, he also knew he had big pride in his big IQ. And he knew that that's not becoming of a Vaishnava, to be proud. So he decided that he would make an antidote. And the antidote was that he would consciously, deliberately, besides everything else in the rest of his day, consciously and deliberately serve another Vaishnava in such a way that they didn't notice it. Because one thing to serve somebody when you want somebody to notice it, but that doesn't help your pride or reducing it. So what he did was he kept a little 3x5 card in his pocket, and each day he would make a little mark, you know, out of the five times a day. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Where, you know, someone didn't even know it, but in his consciousness, he was submitting himself to that person in service to subdue his pride. So I didn't know about this until we were on Navadvip Mandal Prikrama, and the system was we put all of our bedding and, you know, clothing and toothbrush and stuff and put it in a, like a little pack, and would go into a truck in the morning. And in the evening, the truck would be unloaded and, you know, set up your mosquito net and set up your sleeping bag. And so he found out whose net was whose and whose sleeping bag was whose and whose bag was whose, and he'd get them and set them up. 1, 2, 3. I saw him doing that. I said, Maharaj, what are you doing? You know, because someone was just like setting up mosquito nets, and who's doing this? And then he showed me his 3x5 card and told me why. He said, I've been doing this for like 5 years. It wasn't like, you know, he did it for a week or a month. He understood it was a deep tendency, and so he wanted to eradicate that tendency. So, you know, do the math and figure it out how to cultivate sensitivity and personalism. 5 times a day, minimum. You know, consciously go out of your way to do something and cultivate it from your heart. And then it becomes habit in other areas besides when you're keeping your score. as a suggestion. But that's not going to continue unless there's a sincere desire. There's so many things that we start and stop. Too many. Okay? Vayahari?
Guru Maharaj, I had a question regarding the Amanina Mandena.
Okay.
So there is dealing with material pride and taking a humble position with respect to it. How do we deal when we see there is spiritual pride, pride coming out of spiritual advancement in ourselves?
Same. In one sense, it's more subtle, but in another sense, it's the same beast, just in a different dress. So, we bow before Krishna and seek Krishna's protection from that pride. And recognize that whatever it is, material or spiritual, that we have, it's bestowed by Krishna. It's Krishna's, and it's meant for Krishna. So if there's some, whatever it is, spiritual advancement manifest by something, something, all the credit goes to Guru and Krishna. I can't remember the detail, but there's a pastime like this in one of the associates of Ramanujacharya, his servant Govinda or something, and he was receiving pride and asking people to give more praise, receiving praise and asking them to give more praise, and it was going on for some time, and word of that came to Ramanuja, who came to Govinda. He said, Govinda, you're a Vaishnav. Vaishnavs don't want people to praise them more and more. Why are you doing this? He said, they're not praising me enough, because any praise is only due to you. And anything that they see in me that's worthy is due to you. So they should praise more, because you're the bestower of so much spiritual merit. Ramanujacharya appreciated his transcendental thought on the subject, but said, better that you take the more standard position, Govinda, and just don't ask people to praise you more. Like Prabhupada, and when challenged by the reporters, you're a Swami, and I saw they picked you up in a big limousine. What about this, Swami? He said, it wasn't good enough. It should have been a golden car. Huh? Because the disciple should see the spiritual master as good as God. So how can you pick up God in a limousine? It should be a golden car. Everything goes to Krishna. Guru and Krishna. That's... Put your hands. Yes?
Guru Maharaj?
For many years I've been noticing that, or at least I've realized recently that for many years I've been chanting and putting effort in a very doership mentality, and I feel like I'm trying to barge into the spiritual world, and I keep banging my head against the wall. So I want, if you could help on what the mood should be in putting effort. to reach out to Krishna.
How does a servant approach a master? Do they make no effort? They certainly make effort. What should the mood be in approaching the master, making effort? I want to please you. The problem in that is, well, there's a bunch of problems. One of them is there's a mix. It's like, it's not just I want to please you, but, you know, I've got this other thing going on, like, for me. Like this sadhu was speaking to this woman that was worshipping Sitaram for 30 years. And maybe persons do things simply out of a religious sense of obligation or duty or pride, because I'm very religious and the what's in it for me consciousness is permeating. So then some instruction that says that's not really the purpose of the worship. So we're hearing that. It's not the purpose of our chanting is to barge our way rudely into the spiritual world, because it's not going to happen. Then we cultivate something else. Well, it's hard to cultivate something else, and we have a prideful tendency and a doership tendency. Well, continue along that line enough, and you realize that's fruitless and it's foolish. So then comes this need. I need purification, I need mercy. So even if one can, at some point the light goes on, and then you act in knowledge instead of out of passion, the achieving mode. So just in this, aside from other times, just in the course of this weekend, several times already has been approached in a receiver's mode. So take the instruction. It fits. The shoe fits. Put it on. Walk with it. Break it in. It'll get comfortable after a while. In the back? Indulekha? Huh? Somebody? Who had their hand up over here? Okay, way over in the corner. Okay, that's why I didn't. My peripheral vision, especially with these flies, it's really...
Hare Krishna Maharaj, actually my question is relating to your morning class. It's regarding the prayers.
Okay, very good.
Maharaj, like when I hear the prayers of exalted souls, I get really very inspired. So I do offer prayers, but it's not like exactly on the same line, but it's simple prayers, like something like taking my attachment away or something like that. But what happens is, like, after some time, like I don't know, like when these attachments, whatever I had prayed for, like when I like when they tie, I mean, somehow like I feel like I'm not very sure, like I really want, I feel like I don't want them to be taken away or something like that.
Uh-huh.
So even though like I don't explicitly again pray like shouldn't happen or something like that, but it's there in my heart. So my question is like, is it okay or like should I really consider my level and make appropriate prayers? The desire...
I think you've answered your own question. Because something that's beyond what's realistic for you later gets, you know, you do a, what's the word? You make a check on it, or a, you know, a stop. You write a check and you put a stop payment. Should I write checks that are within my means, or should I write checks that are beyond my means that I have to put a stop payment on? Within your means. So, it's an incremental answer. If you want to go to the top of a mountain, you take steps to get to the top of the mountain. Take steps that you can sustain. Then another step, and then another step. Okay? Yes? Where is the microphone?
Hi, Krishna Maharaj. You spend quite a bit of time on humility, what it means, and stressing the fact that we have to practice and cultivate humility. And I've been getting the same message from you in our email correspondences as well. So one way that I'm trying to do this is by bringing to forefront the instruction and also the meaning of humility. So I guess my first question is this how we practice humility?
Yes, precisely.
Okay. But the second thing was, like, I noticed that it's very circumstantial, like whenever, you know, the pride is hurt or something like that, that's when I'm flexing my humility muscle. And is it like a mental it seems like it's a mental exercise or like a kind of a hypnotism kind of a thing. Like, you know, I keep...
Which part?
Like, when I...
The first part or the second part?
When I'm trying to tell myself that...
No, it's not just a mental exercise, because there's Krishna, there's an instruction, there's you, and you're trying to act on the instruction. The beginning is, it's practice. By practice, it becomes second nature. It's not just a mental thing. While you're practicing, there's still the unwanted component that gets sometimes triggered by something out there. That doesn't mean that the other thing was just mental. It means you're an interim stage somewhere. You're not there yet. You're not at the goal of the full stage of spiritual humility. So it's saying the same thing in a different way. It's material energy letting you know you're not there yet, and don't get proud. Because just see, you're not yet humble. You just became whatever, aggravated by something that's out there in the material energy. You're not there yet. So keep going. That's also humbling. Keep going. No? Okay. In the back, in the corner?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, thank you very much for the class. And I wanted to ask you, how dependent is the sankalpa on the karma, Prabhu? Like taking an spiritual...
How important is
dependent,
the...
Dependent.
Dependent on sankalpa?
How dependent is the sankalpa on the karma? Like our
previous...
Yeah, and the spiritual desire also, does it depend on the karma again?
Well... we got a little feedback in that microphone. Okay, it's to have a spiritual sankalpa. It's dependent upon association, not upon karma. Minus association, then our sankalpas are certainly going to be guna and karma based, just like our existence is going to be based on both guna and karma, the qualities with which we associate and the previous activities that we have performed and reactions that we're due to receive. That's going to determine our intention, our determination, our expectation. But that doesn't at all need to prevail. Now, most likely, almost certainly, we would not even be here in Gita Nagari if it weren't for association. It's not karma brought us here. It's association that has brought us to the stage where we want to go way out of our way to come to this remote place, wonderful place, and take part in a retreat that's focusing our attention on Krishna's holy name. It's association. not karma. Is that all right?
Does the fulfillment of the spiritual desire as the effect of karma?
Did you get it?
Does the karma have an effect on the fulfillment of the spiritual
desire? Does the karma have an effect on the spiritual desire? Fulfillment of, in big letters. No. Not at all. Okay?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, thank you very much for the wonderful class. And my question is regarding the various six nice useful tips that you have given to increase our taste for chanting and ultimately for Krishna in association. Now these six tips have...
Three more to come. Okay. Stay tuned for the afternoon.
Okay, so I might be asking this question pretty much in the middle, I apologize for that. But with these six tips, you gave examples, nice examples of how the dogs were barking at you and you had to show your, you know, danda to protect yourself. But sometimes that's because you had the mercy of your guru. You are sitting at a stage where we can see you have intense focus, shelter of the Lord already, and we are still seeking it. So for us, sometimes just showing up that reaction that you show doesn't suffice, and we have to react out of whatever our mind instructs us to those barking dogs. And then when we hit them, suppose, we get into the reaction of the maya, of the karma, because we hit them and they're going to hit us back. And that hits our soul. So how can we be protected on that level where we have to do something, but the mind instructs us, we have to do it, and even then continue to seek the mercy of the Lord?
I got about maybe 40 to 50% of what you said. And it may have something to do with the angle of that speaker.
Maybe you gotta, if I can come closer to you and then talk to you. Maybe if I can come closer.
Bayahari's got it. Relay.
I think sometimes...
Yes.
The example that you gave, if you were able to neglect barking dogs, but because you were situated at a certain, you had a certain amount of mercy, that situated you to protect yourself from those situations. I think that's the most special point.
Brahman. The punchline of the question is a little mysterious, but we can only take shelter of that which we have access to. So if you don't have access to something that's of a spiritual dimension, you'll take access to something that's not of a spiritual dimension. And that's born of the modes of material nature. You know, you just kind of get by with the best that we have if we don't have shelter. And so that's called, you know, religious life is where you have a value and you try to take shelter of that value, like don't get angry or don't steal or something. Don't yell at people, speak pleasantly even if you have to issue some words of correction or something like that. But then, you know, the modes of nature are competing for supremacy, and sometimes we lose that. It becomes yelling, and it becomes something that we don't like. But, you know, what can you do if you don't have shelter? You grab a hold of something that you have access to. And whatever that is, that's the modes of nature and karma. And the people are blown around like the leaves blown around by the wind. What's a leaf to do? But if there's shelter because of the great fortune of some spiritual instruction, at least it's an opportunity, and then one can take shelter of that opportunity. And then comes humility that says, I'm trying, but I can't grasp it. I can't be there all the time. I can be there some of the time. And like this question Varsana was saying, is that like mental? We're reaching for that, but we have to continue to call for mercy. We continue to cultivate based upon the shelter that has been extended to us. And then it becomes manifest as a spiritual reality that's in a mature stage, is unshakable. So now back to the question, if you don't have that opportunity, that shelter, yes, your responses to circumstances are going to be guna and karma based. And it's not like faulting, it's just that's the reality. And a person that recognizes, like I was sharing about my childhood, I didn't feel good about not following a core instruction that Christ gave. But what could I do? Because I didn't have any real shelter. It doesn't mean like the instruction is a wrong instruction, but I don't know how to fulfill it. And I didn't find anybody else that did either. They were faking it, but not fulfilling it. Trying without proper knowledge. Maybe that's a gentler way of saying it. So goodness is better than passion and ignorance, but goodness is not sufficient. Okay. Look at that. It's time for lunch. Śrīla Prabhupāda ki, śrī śrī Rādhā Dāmadhāra ki.